welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen.
With me today is life coach and LOA teacher Joel Elston.
This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. Joel, one thing I often talk about here on the show is how technology can get in the way at times and actually make things lively and interesting around here. And today is no exception because all my settings got wiped out on the computer. So forgive me, I'm putting things together as we're talking here. I think I've got it. I mean, you can hear me, I can hear you. That's the most important thing, right?
That's sort of the main concept. And, you know, I support this. It's a funny story because this weekend I was doing the dreaded taxes, getting it prepared to go to the accountant, had a bunch of stuff to print. And the printer is so amazing because it works every day. I use it frequently. But it decided the day I need to print my tax stuff, it's just not going to cooperate. No logic, no kind of thing. And so I just, you know, like I normally do when this happens, I just went and bought a new printer. technology.
Technology is one of those things you can't live without. And to use the old joke, you can't live with it either. So you're kind of stuck in the middle.
Yes. I mean, it really is. We've become very dependent on, obviously, and, you know, having an instant print is a very cool thing to have, but it's, you know, this machine works every single day of the year until the day I probably need it to work the most. And
that just is what keeps things lively around.
Yes. So it is. So
it actually kind of fits into our topic for today. Our topic, once again, comes from a post that you shared a few days ago, in which you posed a question to your followers on Facebook. You essentially asked, if you omit something, is that dishonest? Or to put it another way, is it the same thing as lying?
Yeah.
And you got some interesting answers on that one. It's a challenging question. It's an interesting question. One of the things that struck me about it the most, though, is that at its root, it's about negativity. And at its root, what we were just talking about is also about negativity. I'm so negative because my printer didn't work. I'm so negative because my technology is making it hard for me today and I have to rebuild everything and so forth. And the thought that goes along with that in my mind is, well, we say this over and over again. We get to choose what our response is.
Sure.
So pretty much the same thing applies in the case of our topic. In other words, if somebody omits something, we can see that as a negative and get all upset about it. We can see it as a negative and not really care about it, or we can see it as positive. We can see it any of those ways.
Right. Well, and you know, the question on, by the way, my response was very positive because I went and bought a new printer. It's like, you know, I'm grateful that I can just go buy a new printer. And do you know Walmart will deliver a printer to you in 1 hour?
I did not know that.
Yes. I mean, they have a thing that I don't know how they got it here so fast, but I bought a printer that was here in an hour. So that's good information for whoever needs that. But anyway, the concept for that, you know, and you made a really good point. The question is more, obviously, it's not as simple as I'm posing it. Is omission lie, but the intention has a lot of time. Like telling somebody some really bad news at the wrong, there's times when withholding is kind. You know, it's like one of my responses was that somebody had a loved one who was in a nursing home that has, you know, beginnings of dementia, and one of their family members had passed away. So is it wrong to not tell her that this woman who's 91 that so-and-so passed away? Yeah, it's protecting. Sometimes leaving out things can be kind in a sense. So it is perspective-based. But there are situations that really come to mind, like when people don't tell the whole story, when they know you're seeking the whole story and they're leaving out pieces. And I guess every relationship and every person you're involved with, this question becomes, you know, dependent on the intention and the relationship. If you're married or in a relationship with someone, sometimes omission can be really brutal. You know, it's just like, yeah. Other times, you know, you don't have to share everything. So I think it's an evolving question based on the situation. And it also Lindsay, you know, first of all, honesty in general. One of the things that my son and I just had this conversation. He's having a really hard time with the concept of honesty some days. And we were, I was going over that with him. And what I'm upset with him about, as I clearly have caught him in a lie, is he's just sticking with the lie. He's just not going to budge from the lie. And my frustration is, you know, here's the exact evidence, and there's not even a plausible reason other than this, and it's no big deal, but I'm more upset with you just, and he couldn't quite grasp that. So I just let it go, but hopefully he can reflect on that, because that is, you know, like, you know, he'll say in detail, like, you know, you did this today. I did not do that today. Well, he actually did it yesterday, but he's playing lawyer with the terms, you know what I'm saying? So I think a lot has to do with the intention, what you're trying to seek. But, you know, I like all information. So if I'm having a close relationship with someone, it doesn't have to be a personal relationship, but a business relationship, I want all information. And holding stuff for me is not something that I think works well. If you know, the companies that I work with and own and my own private practice, I don't want somebody to admit something like, well, he's not going to like that, so I'm going to admit it. It's not, that's not good. It's not good at all.
Yeah. I would tend to feel the same way. I can also not help but think about how my marriage ended.
Yes.
A story that you know.
Yes.
And most of our listeners know who listened to the episode I did about a year ago, telling the details about that. But from my perspective, what was involved was a gigantic omission.
Yes.
She didn't tell me she was upset. She didn't tell me that things were falling apart. She didn't tell me it was not going well. She just left.
Right.
After a 23-year marriage.
Yes. Yes.
And as you pointed out to me quite correctly, that first day is because you were one of the first people I called for help, because I was really in need of help. As you pointed out, there were going to be some questions that I was going to want answers to that I would never get.
Right.
And that was one of them. Why, what was the reason for the omission?
Yeah.
The closest I ever came to an answer from her quite a bit afterward was, well, because I also challenged her on the fact that she's a former psychotherapist who understands the importance of communication. And she said, even a psychotherapist can make a mistake. That was the closest I ever came to an explanation about why. So the omission included, in my case, lack of information. Lack of
yes. Knowledge. Yes.
And that's the challenging one. That's the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with directly.
Right.
Because first of all, it was a very close personal relationship. And because I had to realize I will never likely know the answer to that one.
Right. And to me, that's where the nuance of this question comes in. There's, you know, I'm slow to trust. I don't trust many people. And that sounds sort of a negative thing, but I'm very careful whom I trust. And when I trust you, I'm all in. I'm trusting you completely. It's just not and you know, I will share everything. And as you know, I can share some crazy stuff. So I'll share whatever. But once trust is violated, it doesn't mean everything. It's just, I realize, and sometimes omissions can be, like in your case, tell me the truth. Don't postpone it. You know, don't postpone it. If you know something bad, let's go ahead and I'm going to pull the Band-Aid off, guy. Let's just get it done. But when you start, when I left Williamsville Wellness in 2013, I believe, one of the things that I found odd, and my brain doesn't normally do this, is about 2 weeks before I was gone, the owner of the company, who used to come in my office every day and talk for an hour, quit doing that. When I answered the phone one time and his wife was on the phone, who's really the financial backer behind that whole program, she used to always say, Joel, how you doing? It's so good to talk to you. So she goes, is Bob there? And I go, hey, yeah, I'll get him. And she didn't say anything. She just, I was like, and so I started thinking, and I don't like to think that way, but a change in dynamic had taken place and I didn't understand why. And so you know, they were holding that. What they were waiting for is any kind of reason to be able to let me go. And if you look long enough, you'll find that, you know, and so that's what the process was going on. So, you know, I don't normally like to scan the horizon, but when behavior changes and you feel different, there's an omission in place there. There's something like that. And that, so those are the times where withholding becomes, lying to me. It's just, you know, if you want to get rid of me, it's not a hard thing to do. I'm not, when, you know, just simply say, this isn't working out. And show me what door. I'm gone. I'm in the car. I'm gone. There's no hard feeling. But, you know, just a couple weeks of that sort of nebulous, you know, also just anything I would ask for normally do it. Just I was getting no response. And it was like, okay, and so the shock of the morning where I was trying, really wasn't a shock because I saw the behavior before that. In your case, it was a total shock. You were like, what? I'm just, you know, she was hiding everything and it's just there. So to me, those situations, again, the intention of it was to deceive. When the intention is to deceive, that's what I consider a lie. Sometimes omission it's not necessary information. I don't share everything with everyone. It depends who you are in my life depends on what I share.
And, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and so I don't consider it a lie for me to omit topics of people that I'm not that close with, but people that I'm very close with, they get complete transparency. It's just the best way to live. So I think the question is, yeah, and I love anyone that's listening live that would comment. I'd love to hear input too, because it's such a fascinating topic, because lying and omissions and intent or you know, playing like my son was doing, I didn't do that today, you know, with no further comment and say, okay, you did it yesterday, but you said today. Like, that's not relevant when you did it. I'm just saying you did it. And it's just this idea of cycling in that playing, you know, what is your intention in deceiving or withholding? Is it to deceive? That's a problem. Is it to protect? That might not be, you know, a bad thing. Sometimes it's just, and not everybody needs to know everything. So it's really an in-depth question.
It is. Yeah. And by the way, there's also the flip side, which is, it's not just what's the intention of the person who's telling the omission. It's what's the intention of the person who's calling out the omission, who's calling out the lie.
Yeah.
Because intention works both ways. I mean, it's not intention. It would be really simple if intention was unidirectional, but it's not. It's always multidirectional.
Right. And it, you know, you go with that. And as I was talking to Justin earlier, that I was trying to explain to him, the event we're talking about is nothing to me. But the idea that I have evidence that you're lying to me is my frustrating thing. And, you know, on different levels. And, you know, first of all, it's like, it's really evident this has happened. It's happened. So lying about it and just denying it is just, it's not working. And second, you know, some betrayal of trust is, you know, and if you want to be in that inner circle of trust, I have to be able to trust. And so violation of that, and him and I will talk more about it. He's a great kid. But, you know, I could just tell he got caught in a lie and he's just having a really hard time just saying, I told him, one of the greatest things you could tell me right now is, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm lying. Let's move on. That would be glorious for me, because he would understand. It probably wouldn't happen again.
It's amazing. I just keep coming back over and over as we're talking about this too. There are so many different pieces of this, but the one common denominator to the whole thing is we still get to decide how we're going to respond. And literally how we decide to respond is how we're going to experience it. That was the hardest thing I had learned with my experience.
Well, that's every situation in life.
I was never going to get a resolution to it. Never going to happen. I had to find a way to be okay with that. It took me a long time to be. And I'm not sure I'm even 100% there yet, but I'm pretty close. That's a tough journey. That you were originally not okay with at all.
That's for me, you know, that piece of just coming to terms with, allowing, being able to accept. I just got to accept it as it is. And so, you know, when I have a response, like you're saying, my response to things dictates my intentions of it. You know, my argument with Justin earlier, disagreement, we did it very calmly, but the idea for me, my intention was, okay, And I told him this. I said, part of it is, and I'm trying to wash this out, is by you just doing this and sticking with it when I'm pointing to you these facts, you're just basically, you know, I'm taking it a little personally right now. Like you're saying, you're so stupid, I'm going to do this and you won't. Yeah. So I want to try to wash that out because I just know you're stuck in a lie. And I've been in that situation way when I was young too. So I'm going to let it go. But I hope we can get to a place where transparency is there. And that's how I left it. So I and responded well. There's not going to be a consequence. There's no big deal. He knows that I know, and we all know. But hopefully this will get to a place where he can be transparent in the future. But my response at first was, it was a little ego driven. It was a little, I'm taking this personally driven.
And by the way, you're zeroing in on something that I think is really a key point here. Because what you're basically defining is what it takes for you to be successful or feel good about a relationship that you're in this case, a relationship with your son.
Yes.
And what it's going to take for that relationship to continue, to grow and to thrive and to evolve and so forth. And it raises the very important question. Isn't it important to be specific about what it takes essentially to do business with you, essentially to have a relationship with you?
Yes. I
mean, that's what a boundary is all about. If you didn't have something like that, like boundaries, the reason we talk about boundaries so much is because if you don't have boundaries, you don't have a basis for a relationship because the boundary helps define the relationship.
Well, yes, and I am very, you know, in my hierarchy, my Joel's hierarchy of needs, trust in relationships is number one. It always is. So here's a good story. I lived in South Carolina for a while before I moved to Virginia and was co-owner of a treatment center there. And I had a house manager. She's passed away now. And I trusted her completely. And so I found out one time, she told me that one of the clients who was going to be going to jail had given her $5,000 to hold until he got out of jail, because if he took it to jail, they were going to confiscate it. I wasn't happy about that. I've said that we're not, you know, but he's already gone to jail. So I said, keep it locked up in the safe. I said, you put ourselves at risk for liability. I don't like this, but there's really nothing we can do. So she put it in the safe. So the guy's gone for like 7 months, right? So he gets out and first thing he does is call her and I need the $5,000. Mm-hmm. Well, she's claiming that something happened to it. And she had sent him money orders for the story didn't make sense. So she said, I went over across the street to the bank, because we lived literally across from Bank of America. And she said, I got the money order and sent it to him. I said, but where's the money order receipt? Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, I lost that. And it was actually a cashier's check, what she was claiming. I said, okay, that's no problem. I said, they keep records of that. So what date did you do that? So she said, well, I don't remember the exact date. So she has all these papers on the floor, like she's really looking for something, right? And she's, you know, and so she's selling me on the concept. There was not a doubt in my mind that she had sent that money order. I was completely believing that. So I walk across the street and I said, look, you know, here's what happened, blah, blah, blah. The bank manager, who I happen to know, really nice. He said, well, Joel, here's all of our cashier's checks. And they get their order, they're all numbered. And even the ones that get voided, they get a place here and said voided. So every numbered cashier's check said, do you remember the number? I said, do not. So he said, it's real simple. We'll just flip through it. It's been within the last 6 months for sure. That's a big broad thing. So we went. And they don't really, shockingly, they didn't do that many cashier's checks, so it wasn't that many.
I used to work in the bank. It's not a real common thing to do checks like that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we go through the entire stack for the year, and there's not a single $5,000 one, much less the $5,000 one made out to the person she claimed to made it out. Mm-hmm. So I realized at that point she was lying.
Right.
And so I went back and I said, look, I said, the bank doesn't have any record of that. And I personally, I know money's tight sometimes. I'm fine. We can we can work out a payment plan. We're going to have to send him the money no matter what. We got to. You shouldn't have done that in the first place. You shouldn't have taken it into custody. We're going to have to go into our pockets and pay him back. It's just the moral thing to do. But it would really help me for you to just be brutally honest with me right now. You're not going to be fired. And I am really capable of walking away from that and not worrying about it. But my problem, and that's who I am. The truth is far more important than the $5,000 to me. So, and at the time, by the way, $5,000 was a lot more money than $5,000 is to me today. It was a lot more money. It's probably about $100,000 now. So, it's just a different perspective. $5,000 is a lot of money. Me and my business partner had to go into our bank accounts to get the money to pay the guy back. So anyway, as that progressed, it was that moment that I still didn't fire. I had no one to replace her, but I lost total trust in her. So our relationship at that point, professional relationship is all that was. It became strictly business. I used to stop in and talk before I did my groups and sessions, and I no longer did that. I kept any communication I had with her was professional. Could you do this, this, and this? And our agreement was we were going to take it out of her future pay. So we were going to take out whatever $500 a month until it's paid off. And she did pay it back over a period of about 10 months out of her paycheck. But that never alleviated my trust issue, the idea that, and especially again, when you're on the floor with all these papers on the ground, acting like you're going through these files, trying to find a receipt. And I later found out there was never one. It was just manipulation, and it just changed everything. And my relationships are based that anybody that's in my inner circle, the lie is what bothers me. It's not the act of stealing. We'll talk about that, but that's secondary to, I got to be the one that understands. I got to be the one you trust. And that got lost.
And trust is the root of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Yes.
In other words, to what degree are we able to trust a person, and to what degree do we lose trust in a person?
Yes.
Events like this.
Yes, exactly. And that's what this omission thing, that's where the question was coming up. The original question was, if a client earlier in the day had asked the question, he has he's a doctor and he's divorced, and his accountant is, a very attractive lady, and she's about 7 years younger than him and all that. So they've been talking, and he said, I have feelings for her. So what do I do? And he said, I don't want to lose what we have, but should I talk to her about it? Should I, he said, I feel I'm sort of lying to her by not talking to her about it, but I have no clue how she feels. Will I lose her as an accountant? Will I lose her as a friend? And there were these many questions, and that was the origin of what that question was. Am I going to admit that and just admit it out of the conversation? And I was getting the most people agree that it's not a black and white. Everybody on the answer agrees it's not black and white. But in that case, it's like, I don't know if there is an accurate answer there. It's just, it's what is personally sure. It's about you. What do you feel? It's like if you're really that into her and you don't tell her, then hey, what's that going to be? But also don't want to run it. I get it. I don't understand. So it's very complex.
It's also a situation where you're looking deep inside and asking yourself, what's really important? What are my priorities?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's everything's perspective based. And what is my perspective and priorities? That's every question, much less this one.
Yeah, because those priorities really, I think probably the thing that gets people most in trouble with this kind of thing is when they don't look at their own priorities, when they try to justify against, what society thinks or what they think the other person thinks, which by the way, we're often talking about, but nevertheless, we have a tendency to try to imagine what the other person's thinking and then make some sort of determination or even a judgment based on that. But ultimately, all of those, I'll call them externals, are missing the point. The real point is what's important to us?
Yes.
And are we true to ourselves?
Yes.
Because not being true to ourselves, in the case of this guy's relationship, if he's not going to be true to what he really believes in, the relationship's going to fall apart. It doesn't matter which choice he makes.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the thing. It's it, and that's sort of what we got to. You know, you have to decide, is it you're going to lose the relationship one way or another, and you know it's eventually it's going to fall apart. You can't maintain what it is without expressing that, I would assume. He said, well, at least when he left, he was planning on trying to have the conversation, at least touch on it, see what she tried to, if she were, he's not picking up on any signals from her. That's the problem. He doesn't realize if she interested or not interested. And that's just part of the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's also a challenge too, because we do have a tendency, especially males have a tendency to ignore signals. Females are much better at picking up at signals, I find.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm sure. Well, yeah. And also I have a theory. If you have a strong connection or strong feeling to somebody, sometimes your emotions can be implanted on that other person, and you're assuming they're feeling what you're feeling or thinking what you're thinking. And that's not always the case. So I mean, that's something to weigh. You know, it's like guys are terrible at relationships in general. I'll just be honest. I mean, we're pretty pathetic most of the time. So, it's not our strong suit. But life is complicated when it comes to the nuances of things, and the end, none of this stuff in the big scheme of things is a drastic deal, but to me, it's about individual relationships and trust. That's where it comes into play.
Yeah. Those individual relationships and the trust, once again, comes down to what's your priority, what's really important.
Yeah. Yeah. And I that's very high on my list of, you know, priorities. You know, there's a lot of people that I mean, everybody I meet with at some point starts off lying to me at my set. So I'm used to that. And you know, nobody starts off telling me everything. It's just they're I'm the king of being, you know, of receiving omissions in the beginning. You know, I'm the king.
Well, if I remember correctly, there was a story about the kid we call Marcus, not his real name, who from the very beginning told you, "Well, I'm oppositionally defiant. I'm depressed."
Yeah. Marcus, he came on pretty strong. He didn't leave anything out. He was awesome. He gave me the full story. But I mean, from your perspective, you know, like as you're telling the story with you and your ex, having a front row seat to that, when it happened, you were betrayed. You were every emotion possible you were experiencing.
Oh, yes.
Betrayal. Didn't see it. I mean, just everything. Your brain was not. You weren't really able to absorb it. That's what we talked about that first day. It's going to. There's no answers today. We got to just try to regulate the central nervous system right now as much as we can. You're in shock. You've been having. This is a trauma. We got to manage it as a trauma. And we did. You did a great job with it.
Well, I had some good help, so thank you for that.
Yeah.
Also, it took months before I realized what the true, the best word was to describe what happened. Because I think you touched on some good ones to describe it. But ultimately, after about 6 months, I finally realized what it really felt to me. The thing that just ripped me on it was I felt abandoned.
Yeah,
I felt like not only had our relationship been abandoned, but I'd been abandoned without reason.
Yes.
Well, I knew it wasn't without reason. I just didn't know what the reason was.
Right. Well, it felt without reason. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. It felt like there was no reason. It felt you were harmed. I mean, literally something so valuable to be ripped right out from you with that. And not bashing anybody, but the method in which it was done was very unkind. Very unkind.
Yeah, well, I don't think she really was thinking about that side of it, to be honest.
But my point is, whether her intention or not doesn't matter. Yeah. It was very unkind. I'm not saying she was not trying to be unkind, but it is something that I can't imagine not having that closure or being able to operate that way. It's just, you know, it's crazy. It really is.
As you know, she left me a note, which is how I found out about what had happened. And in that note, she said something that there are a number of things, of course, that you know keep resonating in my brain. I keep thinking about them periodically and try to put them aside and try to release them wherever I can and so forth. But one that just keeps coming back is when she addressed the question of why she couldn't talk to me. The answer that she gave was she didn't think she could get through it. And I never got clarity about what that meant. I mean, I can kind of imagine some ideas.
Right.
But I don't really know what that meant. What does she mean by that? And again, that comes back to that lack of information, that lack of clarity that, you know, that information provides, and knowing that I likely never know the answer to that one. But what was it she couldn't get through? She couldn't get through just talking to me. She couldn't get through being honest. Couldn't get through leaving. She couldn't, what was it? I don't know. I have no idea.
What happens when that happens, and doing exactly what your brain just did, the brain, again, is a predictor. It needs answers. Yeah. So it will fill in the blank. And she left you with an open-ended question or statement, and I couldn't get through it. Okay. You saw the checklist you just did. I mean, well, okay, I need a little more that I can't get through it. Are you going to break down crying? Are you afraid I'm going to talk you out of leaving? Are you... it's just it all of a sudden, and that's what your brain, when you're in that traumatic state, it starts obsessing on it. It's like one of my friends who his wife left, and you know, actually the fiance, and she just called one day randomly out of nowhere, and she said, "Yeah, I'm going to break up." And they, I mean, they're like planning on getting married. I mean, he's, you know, this is a guy that he would, and he just, but why is that? I just don't think we're a good fit. She had nothing. So he just pursued her and tried to chase her on all the information he could gather on the internet or you know, on social media, where she's been, who she's seeing. He's trying to fill in the blanks. And I kept telling him, this is an exercise in futility. Exactly. If you do figure it out, one of the things that, what are you wanting? Do you want her to come back now? I mean, after she, you know, that's the thing. It's sort of like your situation. Once it happened, do you want her back? Even though a side of you may, but if she's capable of doing that once, you know that's in the chamber again.
Precisely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that actually hit me really early on.
Yes.
I remember the two people I spoke to immediately after it happened, but there was a third, actually, my brother, was you and my other co-host friend, Cindy Chavez. You're the two that I reached out to first, and both of you pointed that out. And Cindy actually pointed it out really clearly. She said, okay, if you do get her back, do you want her?
Yeah.
And I couldn't answer the question.
Well,
because part of you did. Dark thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a part of you does, because it's such a part of your brain, mind map. You know, but as you logically process it, you're like, if she can do it once, she'll do it again. And, you know, the statistics for people that, and I forget the exact numbers, but they're drastically high. The number of people that after intense relationships of 6 months or more that break up and then try to get back together is dismally, it's very unlikely, because you never get over that first event.
It's so fantastical that they actually make movies out of it.
It's a rare thing. exactly. So you know, and I will give my disclaimer. There's nobody worse on the planet in relationships than me. So let me just throw that out there. I don't advocate very well for knowing how to handle those. But at least in my personal relationship, I'm still like 14 years old. I'm not going to leave that out. I'm not going to omit that from my disclaimer today.
Okay.
But nonetheless, I can see, I work with so many people and seen so many people go through these kind of things, and the negotiation process, the obsessive trying to figure out why, replaying conversations over and over in your head, like somehow they're going to give you another answer. It's all part of the cycle.
It is. And cycle, that really is the word.
Yeah. Yes.
Really is the word. And the question at that point becomes, what's it going to take to end the cycle?
Yes, exactly. And that's important. And that's what we don't realize. Like the first night we, you know, when we talked, when all that happened, I think it was the same day. And so, yeah, I'm just trying to manage look, traumatic stuff. You're not going to get these answers that you keep doing are not coming tonight for sure. They're probably not coming at all, but they're certainly not tonight. Right. That's the hardest time, desperately trying to reach her. Your mind needs an explanation immediately. You aren't going to get that. That's the hardest thing to deal with.
It is. It's very hard to deal with.
Yeah.
It's also, and this pains me to say it, but it's true. It's also a tremendous source of growth.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We talked about that. I have seen, since that happened, I have seen incredible growth in you. You've done new things. You have almost a different perspective. So as anything that is traumatic, a growth mindset benefits you, or a fixed mindset or victim mindset, it harms you. You chose a growth mindset from it. You're propelled. One of the things that I've always been fascinated about is you have a couple, they've been married for 10 years. That seems to be a really good number to start getting divorced at, 10 years of being married. And
that's a heck of a thing to laugh at, but I get it.
it's funny because there's very few divorces that have where the only kid is like 3 or 4. There's a lot of divorces where the kids are 11, 12, 13. It's just, right. So there's that time frame. So I don't know the science behind that. But, this couple, and this is a generic story, but one couple in particular, they get, they've been married. All of a sudden, they just realize we're not compatible. They get divorced, right? Mm-hmm. So immediately, the guy goes and joins a gym and starts eating well and building up. The lady goes on a diet, goes to the tanning booth, gets her hair. And it's like they work really hard to get, back into the game, so to speak. It's right. Like, so a month later, the guy's ripped and looking great. She's looking fantastic. I'm like, why did you guys do that in a marriage? But it's like, oh no, I am propelled to go do this. And nothing drives a guy to the gym more than a breakup. I mean, that is, that's a big thing in the gym.
It makes sense.
You can almost tell when the guy's, I don't know how many times I've been in the gym where somebody said, I've seen him in a couple of years in the gym, and they said, Joel, you're still here? And I'm here every day. And they're like, yeah, wife left me last night. Got to get back at it. Like, that's logical, And it makes sense. But, it's like that the premonition or the thought that, okay, if I'd have gone back and we both got in shape, got our shit together back then, that'd be fantastic. But nah. We wait, and then often the second relationships are far better than the first one because a lot of times people get married in the beginning for the sake of just getting married and they think it's what they want, but the second marriage is often much more compatibility between the two people.
It's probably also something they're giving a lot more thought to.
Yeah,
thinking about the old cliche, burned once, shy twice. I mean, through that, you don't want to go through that again. So if you're going to get married again, you're going to do it with deliberateness. Very planned, very careful.
Yeah. Well, you go through your checklist, it's like, you're like, okay, here's what the last guy brought to the table. Last girl brought to the table. Here's what And we things started off really good. We thought we were deeply in love, but when people aren't very compatible, I have a very good friend that got divorced and, I never said anything, but I wasn't really close to them at the time. But when I first met this couple, I was like, how did he get her? I mean, she's brilliant. She's beautiful. She's just has all these things going on. And he's not a bad guy, but he's like this just. Certainly not equal intellect, just a whole different. I didn't ever say anything until they actually got separated. And I asked, I told her, I said, I first time I met you guys, it was my only question was, how did he end up with you? It's just, it didn't make sense.
And as it turns out, it has nothing to do with logic.
It doesn't. I mean, there's this, a lot of times young people get married, you graduate high school or college, and the expectation is to get married. So what mattered to you when you were 22 or 23 or 24, especially if it's high school sweetheart stuff or whatever, you have an image of what this is going to be. But 22, 23 doesn't translate to 33 or 35. It doesn't translate. You're a much different brain. So it makes a lot of sense when you think about it that way, that we aren't the same people. It's almost impossible if you look at it just from a not an emotional standpoint. The odds of somebody getting married at 22 and being compatible with that same person at 32 is pretty slim, much less because we keep evolving. I was much different at 32 than I was 22 and far more different at 42. So if I would have been with one person during that time, it would have never, you know, because what I was after at 22 is far different than what I was after at 32, and 42 is different than that.
It's interesting as you're describing that, and I love the way you said that because I think it was dead on. It was absolutely accurate. But it also reinforced for me our topic, the topic of a mission. Is a mission a lie?
Yes.
And when you're in a relationship, it doesn't matter what stage you're in. You could be the very beginning of a relationship, in the middle, toward the end, if it comes to an end. Doesn't matter. It's almost impossible to not omit something somewhere along the way. And
yes.
Probably a lot of things. Not
yes.
By intention, not by, they're just simply too many pieces of data to transmit.
Yeah.
There's just too many things to say, too many things to tell about. And,
right.
And if you have a good relationship going, at least I did this for sure, you are sharing stuff. You're sharing all kinds of stuff. Did we omit stuff? Yeah, but not because we're trying to omit it, just because there's too much of it.
Well, and that gets back to intention. There was never an intention to omit. There's just too much of it. So every scenario weighs separately. You know, it's like they don't need all the information. And not because it's not you're hiding. It's, you know, I stopped at the store today and picked up milk and I filled up my gas tank. I don't need that report. I thank you.
There's a thing called TMI, right?
Yeah. Or, you know, just sharing and sharing and sharing. We do have a tendency to try to fit everything in, but also discount the stuff. There's a lot of the stuff we admit is nonsensical. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have any bearing. And, you know, it's that, you know, that's why admission is basically a non-event in those cases where you, especially when things are clicking and things are going good, the stuff you're admitting is you don't have time to share everything that happened today.
But it does raise the very important question. I mean, the ultimate topic here is it a lie to omit something? And if there's so many things that we're admitting for whatever reason, including reasons where we feel like it's not even related to what we're, you know, trying to accomplish with this person or whatever we think is important with our relationship or whatever, is it a lie? Because we omitted it. And I think it becomes pretty clear, well, if that's a lie, then literally our entire lives are lies. They're just filled with lies because we can't possibly fill in all the data.
Right. And again, that's a different, I just think omissions have their own category. You know, when you're intentionally, you know, here's a good one. This happened to, this is so bizarre. So I have a young female client. She was engaged to be married. There is this guy at her job she's very attractive. So was sort of not sort of, he was definitely flirting with her and they had she wasn't really participating, but she wasn't shutting him down. So he sent her, they were sending each other some memes, you know, and stuff like that. And he sent her a picture of him, you know, at the gym flexing. Right. And so she immediately deleted it and did not tell her fiance, right? And so she didn't say anything. Everything was fine. So one day she's in the shower and she had put her phone down without closing it out. So it was open without a password. So fiance is just going through her phone, you know, and he gets to, you know, when you understand deleting a photo doesn't delete the photo. There's the two. You got to delete twice. You know what I'm saying? There's another delete. And so he goes to the trash and finds that photo. And he's curious. And she's like, "Look, I just didn't want you to see that because it would cause it. I deleted it. I told him we don't need to do that." Well, that just started the whole thing. And that was the beginning of the end of their. They never got married. That was the beginning of the end of it right there, because it just, you know, more and more, you know, she felt like, okay, he shouldn't have gone through my phone. And I was trying to, protect him. I realized I should have just told him this happened. It's no big deal. That would have been fine. That's a case of omission. He perceived that as a lie. She perceived that as being protective. And both of their perspectives are probably true.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing about a perspective. I mean, you can look at the same event as somebody else and take an entirely different takeaway from it.
Yes.
Completely. Just because how you think about it is different.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as long as that's the case, then I think ultimately we end up having to make a decision. Are we going to treat omissions as lies and basically make ourselves out to be liars? Or are we going to think about it differently?
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a different category. Does it really belong in the same category as a lie? I don't think it does.
I don't think it does. Unless the omission is actually, there are scenarios that the omission can be a lie when you've been asked directly. Is there anything else nothing else. And then it becomes a lie when you're hiding something. When years ago, when my addiction was so out of hand, I was stealing money from my dad's company, not my finest moment in life. And when he eventually caught me, he was actually very calm. He said, look, I told him, I have a really bad gambling problem. And he yelled at first, then he got calmed down. We'll figure it out. And he goes, okay. He said, I have a plan. He said, your mom and I talked about it. We're going to replace the money you took. Is there anything else out there you're not telling me? Because this is such a big number. Is there anything else out there? No, Dad, there's nothing else.
And there's
a ton
out there.
Of course, there's always something else out there.
Yeah.
And what I've done is I've taken a check from the old, where they used to feed a check to the computer. I took a check from the bottom of the stack and wrote myself a $1,500 check and cashed it. And that's not going to be found for at least 30 days until they bounce the book. So my goal was to go gamble the money, put it back. And even if I got caught in the thing, I would have replaced it, right? Mm-hmm. So, I was holding on to that lie. And I don't know why, because he kept saying, I can't imagine this is everything. And I'm like, Dad, it's everything. He goes, and I'm like, okay, he can't find out today. But sure enough, I ironically, a week later, I went and I won something like $9,000 gambling. So I took the $1,500 back. I just took it to the bank and I deposited cash, into the checking account. And the bookkeeper, I went and told the bookkeeper, I said, look, it was so embarrassing. She knew everything that went on because she's a bookkeeper. And so I said, look, I'm telling you what happened. I took this check. I cashed it. I have paid it back in cash. I said, I know if you got to report it to my dad, but the account will balance. And I said, so whatever you need to do, but I just want to let you know that's what I did. And she never told my dad. He never knew. But it was certainly a lie in omission because he kept asking that specific question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that in that case, that's the interesting question. Is that kind of omission a lie? It certainly has a harm element to it.
Yeah.
That's also what we're pinning on here. The fact that there was some harm that was done, even though the harm was undone before the harm manifested.
Right. Yeah. But if you go rob a bank and then change your mind and give the money back, the courts don't care. You're still going to prison.
Yeah.
Same theory. So for me, I knew what he was asking and I wasn't going to tell him. In that case, it was a lie in my mind. That's straight lie. Yeah. He was asking.
So fun.
Well, yeah, I love it. Well, because he's literally asking me this question. It's not nebulous. It's like, is there anything else? Have you taken any more money? Nope, I have not.
Well, that part was a lie. That wasn't even
a That's lie.
That's a lie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's how it evolved to a lie. But at the end, eventually, I stole money again and got fired. Thank God. That was a terrible job. And paid everybody back. And my parents were made whole, fully, paid back over the years. That doesn't make it all right, but it was part of my process. I was the king of omissions back in the day. I never was giving everybody everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question that also goes along with that for me is, who's being harmed? Because I think we can make the argument ultimately you were harmed the most.
Yeah, the there's nobody more damaged from my gambling addiction than me. And, you know, or I can also argue there was no greater thing that ever happened to me than me hitting a rock bottom and building my life back too.
That's what's so odd about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So
many times we talked about how weird it is that the worst things that happen in our lives are the things we grow the most from.
Yeah, I mean, at that moment, you know, when I eventually got fired from my dad's company, I got another job at another company, stole more money from them. They fired me. They weren't my dad. They pressed charges. You know, all this was a horrible, terrible way to live. I went to jail. There's no good story here. I ate up a trash can. Just really tough times. But yet it was from that I began to rebuild. When everything was gone, I rebuilt. And I really believe I have a far better life today than I ever would have had if all that didn't happen. I'm not excusing it. I'm not trying to write it, but they were necessary events to have the life I have today. I have a life that I wouldn't trade for anybody. My life fits me absolutely perfectly. It's just like it was planned, and all those things were necessary to get me here.
In fact, there are some people who will say that you did plan it. This was a pre-laid
intention. Yeah. Well, you know, I believe that too. But this concept of, you know, everything is perspective based. So, you know, when I tell people the greatest thing that ever happened to me was my gambling addiction and all that came from it, because I'm very stubborn and hard-headed, and my gambling addiction broke me. It snapped me. There was nothing left. There was almost like I wasn't going to be able to rebuild until every single thing is gone. And I mean, everything was gone. I was penniless. Nobody was speaking to me. I had nowhere to live. I had no transportation. I started from absolute zero, actually below zero. I owed about $250,000. When I started. So again, I came back from that.
Mm, yeah. That's a heck of a thing to come back from. It also, there's something I think about the pain. I mean, our society focuses a lot of attention on pain in a lot of different ways. Yeah. It drives so much of what goes on, and so much of what we pay attention to, so much of what we throw our energy into. It's really an odd thing, because I think what happens over time, I think we on some level recognize, in kind of a twisted way, we recognize the value of experiencing the pain, because we figure on some level that we're going to grow out of it. I mean, I've never really quite figured out how we come to that conclusion, but somehow I think we do, because it happens so often. So we must at least have some kind of process going on. Well,
yeah, I agree with that. Sort of certainly didn't feel like it was that way when I was going through it. But in retrospect, everything had to happen to strip it all away from me. I had to, as long as I'm holding on to that other stuff, it just, I wasn't going to stop. I wasn't going to change. But just like I had, yeah, it was. And it boiled down one day, I share the story, it's in my book, the bench. I'm sitting on that bench and I have a gun, and I'm like, hey, I'm either going to recover or I'm going to end it right now. Life removed all options but those two. And it was really easy at that point. It's just either I pull that trigger or I get up and I get busy. And, you know, clearly I chose the latter. And and it worked out great. I mean, I have, you know, life, you know, my life has been amazing since then. But it's at that moment, there was only two choices. And the prerequisite to get to those two choices is absolutely everything had to be gone.
Yeah. I mean, that to me, I mean, I'm still kind of on the fence of this whole idea of pre-life planning, you know, having an intention, a life contract going into life. Okay, well, I'm going to do this. I'm going to experience this, because that's a really interesting kind of experience that I'll learn so much from. And part of the reasons I'm on the fence about it is that's what you just described is a perfect argument for that being true.
Yeah.
Because it's such a preposterous scenario. You actually got yourself into a case where there were only two possible answer.
Yeah.
It was either higher
or grow. Yeah.
One or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. It life's so complicated. That was the least complicated day in my life. It's either pull that trigger or get busy. And The get busy was, I'm not, and when I say that, I don't want to paint it like, oh, I snapped my fingers and everything was great. Yeah. I grinded for 5 years. I grinded my way out of that before I even got to sort of a break even concept. And then everything just took off. It was, you know, as you know, the story, it just kept going. But I really believe, I don't know the details of how all it works. I don't claim to. I do feel we choose this existence, and I do choose we experience it. Just like when you go to Universal Studio, one of the greatest roller coasters of all time is called the Hulk. It's incredible. I love roller coasters. I love to ride the Hulk. It flips you, it spins you, it goes 80 miles an hour. It's just incredible. I don't like the merry-go-round. I like the Hulk. And I can see my personality choosing. I chose this. I chose this crazy scenario. It's like me and my dear friends and I, and we go to these escape rooms frequently now. We've done twice. And you know, the scenarios where you work your way out of them, the kids love it. It's fantastic. It's intended to have to figure it out. That's what's exciting. So, you get placed here. There's no instruction manual. None of this is available to you. In fact, the programming I was given as a child was literally the opposite of what I believe. It's just the stuff they were telling me was this, you know, they were trying to, no, it's the opposite of what I believe. And it's just amazing that I was able to sort of figure it out. This helped me strip away all that bad programming, and this is what I got.
Yeah. But that to me is how that perfect storm seems so incredibly perfect. I mean, it was planned, like it was just pre.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I tell the story about me eating out of a trash can and how that affected me later with my son TJ. You know, how the synchronicity. There's so many things that took place years apart that it just is fascinating to see how it all came together at the exact time, and why I'm sitting in, you know, the Richmond, Virginia area, running my life coaching practice, writing my next book, how all that happened. It literally seems impossible. It doesn't make sense that it could even work out. How one thing had to lead to another, led to another. And each time I didn't realize that next step, it wasn't a punishment. It was evolution.
Yeah. I think this is definitely a good topic for us today, because like all the good topics, this one had about 1,000 rabbit holes. We went down about 300 of them. So
yeah, we get to it next time. Yeah, I love that. But that's the beauty of what we're talking about. We say this every single week when you and I talk. All of this is perspective based. Everything's perspective based. I mean, there's no way. So there isn't a clear cut answer to the question. It is based on the situation, based on the perspective, and the event can take place. Like you and your ex-wife can have totally different perspectives of what happened that night.
Oh yeah,
totally.
And I'm even hopeful one day I may actually find out what her perspective was.
Yeah. I mean, would that be great? I mean, it would be able to do that. Yeah, I think it'd be fantastic.
I think it'll be both eye-opening and no surprise. I think it's going to be both.
Yeah, I think it will, you know, and you know, the idea that whatever was going on with her at that moment, that seemed like the right thing to do. I would love to just sit down, not in any way to be punitive or angry with her, but I would love to just have a conversation. I would love to, you know, how I'm interested in how people get to where they get. I want to know what happened that night, how you thought, how you feel about it now, what took place, you know. I just love information like that because I love how the brain works and whatever was going on, you know. And I saw your side of it. I didn't see her side.
No, of course not. How could you?
It's not possible. Yeah.
You know, you weren't privy to that. But what you were privy to, what I was privy to, was a great conversation. So thank you once again for, man, we go off the deep end on these things. We don't do a show. We just go right off.
We go right into the end. I love it. I always enjoy you, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too. I appreciate you as well. And thank you to our podcast listeners everywhere. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.